Okay, Zach, can you bring that first one up? Okay, so the name of the thing is Clowns, Cannibals, and Ananias. And you'll see this is a picture of Maddie and me surrounded by clowns plus a bunch of people in face paint. And so I had to bring that up first. So we're going to talk about one day in America. This was last night, the circus, obviously. Actually, this was at our house. We just get together and paint our faces. So anyway, we're going to talk about one day in America. And the day is, we're going to go back a few years to May 10th, 1994. And May 10th, 1994 was a Tuesday. And three big events happened on that day. And we're going to talk about them and how they correlate to us. And how just an ordinary, everyday day relates to our lives. The top baby names at that time, believe it or not, were Brittany and Brandon. So congratulations to you guys. So here, Barboy says, why? Where do you get these stats? So here, if you were born on that day, you are now 13,076,720 minutes old. You will be 1 billion seconds old sometime on May 26th in the year 2026. So, look at Barb, she's shaking her head. Who knows this stuff? Here's the biggie. If you were a dog and you were born on that day, you'd be 116 today. So making those birthdays look pretty good. So anyway, look, Marshall's looking at me like, what does this have to do with anything? We'll get there because of the things that happened on that day. Okay. So this is a story of John and Jeff and Ananias. There's a full moon that day. And it wasn't at nighttime, it was in the middle of the day. And we had what's called an annular eclipse. Now, an annular eclipse is different from a regular eclipse. Can you bring up the next slide, please, Zach? This is what an annular eclipse looks like. It's the moon doesn't completely block out the sun, but it fills in the middle part and still allows the sun to shine around it. Am I off? No? Up higher? How's that? Better? Thank you. So this happened on that day. It was during an annular eclipse back in the 1800s that they discovered helium, by the way. And another dumb fact. But so we're going to talk about John first. So this is the first thing that happened on this day. There was an annular eclipse. John was a normal guy. And John would do parties for kids. And he'd dress up as a clown, Pogo the Clown. And he was really good at it, and he was really popular with it, and the parents loved him, and the kids loved him, and he would go to all these parties. He was a very well-respected man. He was a member of the Democratic Party, and he was the head of his neighborhood committee to make sure people had their lawns cut right, and trash was taken out on the right day, and all those things. So he was the guy in charge of all that. So he was well-liked by his neighbors and his peers. And next slide, please, Zach. This is where John lived. Nice upper middle class home. The houses around him weren't so nice. The houses around him are fairly run down. But this is where John lived. And he had his own construction company, and that's where he got the money to be able to afford this. He was pretty good at his construction company. So one day a 15-year-old goes missing, a 15-year-old kid. And his mom said the last place that she knew he was going was to John's house, to see about getting a summer job at his construction company. And so the police showed up at John's house here and smelled a strange odor and got a search warrant and found 27 dead teenagers in his basement that he had buried in his basement. And he had killed six more that he'd thrown in a nearby river. Normal looking guy, normal life, everything going for him, killed all these people. They were all teenagers. In the fall of 1978, I started at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. The same time I started there, Jeff started at Ohio State. Can you bring up the next slide, Zach? These are the towers. You've seen them 100 times down there. Merrill Tower and what's the other one, Lincoln Tower? Merrill Tower and Lincoln Tower. If you've driven on 315 or 270 or 670, any of them, and you've circled the Ohio State campus, you've passed these towers. Jeff stayed in this tower closest to us here when he was a student at Ohio State. I was dating my first girlfriend. He'd already killed his first victim. by this time. It would be 9 more years before Jeff would kill again. He only stayed here at Ohio State for 1 semester, and then he dropped out to join the Army. He was an alcoholic, and so that didn't last either. He got kicked out of the Army. And then he moved to Milwaukee because his parents were divorced and his dad lived up in Milwaukee. So he lived up to Milwaukee, and there he became known as the Milwaukee Cannibal. And he's the most infamous serial killer in American history. And he started visiting gay bars. And he would eventually pick up and kill 17 young men, mostly African American, at these bars in his apartment up in Milwaukee. One day, one of them, he was such a good liar, one day one of the men, he would take him back to his apartment with promises of alcohol and drugs and things. And one day he had drugged one, and as the guy was coming out of it, he realized Dahmer was going to kill him, and so he escaped the apartment. He hit Jeff, and he ran out of the apartment and found the policeman, police car, and he went up to the police, and he was in this kind of stupor because he'd been drugged, and Dahmer was so smooth that he came out and told the police, "This is just my boyfriend. He's a little drunk." And the police said, "Okay," and let Dahmer take him back to his apartment where he was later killed. This is how good he was at doing his things. Dahmer is, I'll spare you the gory details, but Dahmer is infamous for keeping the people he killed in his refrigerator and eating them at later times. So this is the guy. Jeffrey Dahmer would say this when he was sentenced by the judge. "It's hard for me to believe that a human being could have done what I've done, but I know that I did. Your Honor, I know my time in prison will be terrible, but I deserve whatever I get. And I ask for no consideration." See, he wasn't insane. He wasn't nuts. He was just a normal person whose thing was killing people. Now, the important part about this and where this comes into play for us, and we'll get to this later on, is the reason Jeffrey Dahmer started killing people and how it applies to everybody in this room, especially young people. Acts chapter 8, verse 3. This is our introduction to the great Paul. The Bible calls him Saul at this time. "But Saul was going everywhere to destroy the church. He went from house to house, dragging out both men and women to throw them into prison." Now, here's the thing. This is the English version of this. In the original writing, what Paul was doing, the writing says he was dragging them out to be torn apart like they were like an animal being torn by wild beasts. This is Paul when we're introduced to him, the great apostle Paul in the Bible. He's going here. He shows no mercy. Saul was cruel, and he was brutal, and he was showing no mercy to men, to women, to children, to anybody. If you belong to Jesus, if you claim Christ, he was going to see to it that you didn't live. And so he didn't, God bless you. Paul didn't do this. He didn't hate Christians because we followed Jesus. He hated Christians because he was a very devout follower of the Jewish law. He was one of the high-ranking members of the Jewish hierarchy. And he thought that everybody that followed the true God should be following the ways of the Hebrews and should be doing what they were doing. And then along comes these guys, Peter and John and James and Matthew and Bartholomew, and here comes these guys and saying, "No, you don't have to do that anymore. What you have to do is you have to put your faith in Jesus Christ who died for your sins." And so Paul didn't think that was right. He thought, nope, to follow the true God, you have to do all this stuff. And that's why Paul was persecuting the church, because he thought they had fallen away, that they were false believers in the one true God. And so we know what happens next, right? Paul's on the road to Damascus. Acts chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. "But Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues at Damascus, so that if he found any belonging to the way, men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem." The way here is what they called Christians. So Christians will later be called Christians in the Bible, but the way were people who followed Christ at the time. And so what's going on here is Paul's going to Damascus, and Damascus at this time was not part of the Roman Empire. Damascus was actually part of the Parthenian Empire. And so when the Parthians came to power, they made a deal with the Jews back here in Jerusalem that anything that has to do with the Jews, with your people over here in our territory, you can deal with. And so Paul had to go to the leaders of the Jews, the high priests and the magistrates, and he got permission to come over here to Damascus and start dragging the Christians out. And what he would do, like if he grabbed these two and said, okay, put these guys in chains and let's drag them back to Jerusalem, and one of the officials from Damascus would say, what are you doing? He could bring out that piece of paper and say, I have permission from Jerusalem, and they'd say, okay, go about your business. And so that's why Paul had to get permission from the high priest to go to Damascus and start dragging Christians home. So we know the story. Near Damascus, a light and a voice come from heaven, and Paul falls to the ground. And what happens when Paul is there on the ground? What's he do? Goes blind. Very good. Paul goes blind. The voice says, who are you persecuting? Why are you persecuting me? And Saul says, who are you, Lord? Now listen, he wasn't addressing Jesus as God here. Lord could have been in this time, it could have been your husband. It could have been a high-ranking official. It could have been the king. It could have been, you know, one of the Roman centurions, anybody. They addressed everybody as Lord. So when Paul says, who are you, Lord? He wasn't acknowledging or recognizing that Jesus was God here. It was simply the greeting that they used. And so then the voice says, I'm Jesus, who you're persecuting. Now listen, who did Paul think he was persecuting? You. Who is he really persecuting? Christ. Let's remember that, young people. Listen, it's going to get worse. It is never going to get any better than it is today. It's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And when the world attacks you, remember this, they're not attacking you, they're attacking Christ. There's a great meme, has a picture of President Trump, and he's sitting there pointing in the camera, and it says, remember this, they're not after me, they're after you. I'm just in the way. And that's the same thing it is with Jesus, okay? They may not know that they're angry at Jesus, but he's the one that they're attacking. And so Jesus lets Paul know in no uncertain terms that you think you're persecuting my people, but it's me that you're persecuting, Paul. And so he strikes him blind. Now here's the thing, Paul didn't know. He's going to be blind for 3 days, we know now, but he didn't know. He had no idea. All he knows is that a couple seconds ago he could see and now he's blind. And so he has to get up and he's being led by the hands of his people. God says, take him to Damascus, and he can't see. And we picture this as, okay, he's blind for 3 days. But picture yourself being blind. Just boom, you're blind. Can't see anything. You couldn't walk out that door without feeling your way through the barriers in front of you and over the people. And this is what Paul's facing. All of a sudden, this is his new reality. So he doesn't argue when Jesus says, you're persecuting me. Just accepts that that's the truth. When being struck blind will do that to you. Has a way of getting your attention. So God calls a guy named Ananias. Why was it Ananias? It had to be Ananias. Why couldn't it be Peter or John or Matthew or, you know, the Michael Jordans and the Kobe Bryants and the Tom Brady's? Why couldn't it be those guys? Why'd it have to be Ananias, somebody we know very little about from the Bible? Had to be him. Acts 9:10. Now there was a disciple at Damascus named Ananias. The Lord said to him in a vision, Ananias. And he said, here I am, Lord. Now, at this point, Paul's blind, and Ananias reacts the way Moses is reacting in the last couple of sermons, the last three sermons, and the way everybody acts in the Bible. He says, okay, Lord, I'm your man, right? Remember how Moses reacted? That's how Ananias reacted. It's like, well, are you out of your mind, God? Do you know who this guy is? Are you aware that this Paul that you want me to go see, are you aware that he's murdering followers of you? Are you aware of that? And God does what he always does. He ignores his objection. And he says, he's seeing you coming in a dream. And so I want you to go to him. And I want you to show him everything that's going to happen to him as he serves me. And so you have to understand here what God's doing with Saul. Saul's not just physically blind. He's spiritually blind to what God is now doing in the world. Jesus is now the way to heaven. And Saul thinks that the law is still the way to heaven. And so he's going away and he's persecuting all these people that say Jesus is the way to heaven. He is spiritually blind to the truth. And so he has to have that removed, not just the physical blindness. He has to have that removed as well. And so he sends Ananias. And so Ananias is the Greek name. Can you bring up the next slide, please, Zach? Hanania is his given name, his Hebrew name. Yah means God. Hanan means grace. And so the first thing Paul sees after everything he's done to all these Christians, all these people murdered, he opens up his eyes and the first thing he sees is the grace of God. And that's what happens when you become a Christian. It erases your past and you see the grace of God. Barb and I, sometimes on Saturdays, we watch Criminal Minds marathons. I got poor Barb hooked on that now. And they asked at the end of one episode, they said, do you think serial killers are born or made? And then Rossi, the one character, says, you know, his mom was like this and his dad was like this. And the other girl says, he never had a chance with those genetics. So do you think these bad people, as we call them, you think they're born? You think they're born to be killers? Or do you think they become killers? Jeffrey Dahmer, on why he became a serial killer. If a person doesn't think there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought anyway. I always believed the theory of evolution as truth, that we all just came from the slime. When we died, you know, that was it. There's nothing. Jeffrey Dahmer became the most infamous serial killer in history because he believed in evolution. The lie that we're nothing. We're just slime. We're just advanced monkeys. And there was no God to be accountable to. That's his own words. That's why he became a serial killer. He thought, I'm never going to pay for my crimes. It makes a difference. We're all just advanced monkeys anyway. Now listen to, that's Jeffrey Dahmer on why he became a serial killer. Now listen to Jeffrey Dahmer's dad on why his son became a serial killer. You ready? Because I quit taking Jeff and abandoned the church when he was a boy. See how things work together? If we teach our kids that things are more important than God, and we teach them that we're all just a bunch of monkeys, and that we all just came from slime, listen, they don't think they have to be accountable to anyone or anything. That's why the world's in the mess it's in today. We think we're all just a bunch of monkeys. Now listen, and we're almost done. Remember I told you three things happened on that day? The first thing that happened was the eclipse. The second thing that happened was John Wayne Gacy, the clown, was executed in prison. The third thing that happened that day was Jeffrey Dahmer, the most infamous serial killer in history, was baptized in the family of Christ. The point is this. He's living in prison, a living death, and he found the life of Christ there in prison. A pastor named Roy Ratliff in Madison, Wisconsin, was asked by another pastor to baptize Dahmer. And so he spent a couple hours a week, every week, for 7 months visiting Dahmer and making sure that Dahmer understood what was going on and making sure that Dahmer understood his past and things he did and what grace is and what baptism is and what God's grace does. And Ratliff, in his book, says he's absolutely convinced that, yes, Dahmer was a born-again Christian. Jeffrey Dahmer was killed in prison by another inmate who beat him to death one day. But Dahmer went right to Jesus. Now, here's the thing. how could God let Jeffrey Dahmer go to heaven? He killed people, kept them in his refrigerator, ate them. But one day he opened his eyes. And just like Paul, when he opened his eyes, Dahmer had his eyes open to God's grace. And that God's grace can cover anything. Anything we've done, anything we are doing, anything we feel that we're unworthy of God. So let me ask you, what makes you think God can't save you? What makes you think you're unworthy of the grace of God? What makes you think that when Jesus hung on that cross and died that terrible death, that it didn't apply to you, that Jesus' blood just wasn't quite good enough to cover what I've done? It's good enough for you, but it can never atone for the things I've done. God's grace covers every sin of every person, of everyone who puts their trust in Him. Pastor Rory Ratliff, Jeff asked me, do you think there's room in heaven for me? The thing is, he dared to ask, and he dared to believe the answer. So let me ask you something, guys. Do you think there's room in heaven for you? Do you think that God loves you enough and cares about you enough that he saved a place in heaven for you? With all you know about yourself, with all the things you've done, listen, young people especially, with all the mistakes you're going to make for the rest of your life, and you're going to make a lot of them, you think God can still love you? You think he still loves you? You think he still cares for you? You think his blood still applies to you? Listen, like Dahmer, do you dare to believe the answer to that question? Because the answer to that question is yes. His grace will cover anything in your life. I love you guys.